in our weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, by the grace of God, we have come to the study of fourth chapter, where first Lord has shown that this knowledge is divine. It doesn't come from just a limited human intellect. This science of taking our life to the goal is not originated in some human being, not a product of thinking and then just connecting the facts and then rationally presenting it. That is always fraught with mistakes, the limitations that a person has, they show up there. But this divine knowledge is not like that. It is sourced in the universal consciousness. It is the God who has taught this knowledge. And this is important to know for a spiritual aspirant, because otherwise whatever spiritual practice we will undertake or whenever we will try to follow this knowledge, we will have a doubt. This may be wrong. After all, what this Krishna knew, he might be mistaken. So it is to ward off this, it is told that it is not from a human intellect. Krishna is not a human. The appearance is human, but the knowledge or the actual nature of the being is divine. So don't think that this is some other human being that is giving you the knowledge. It may come from a human form, but that is not, that form is not the originator of it. Like you are getting this sound from the loudspeaker, that the speakers, they are bringing you the words. But those speakers are not speaking that, you know. It is, some person is speaking and that is conveyed to you through the speakers. Those speakers don't have that knowledge. So somebody is speaking and that is conveyed to you through the speaker. So a form that we see, the Lord Krishna's form, and we have to see that as the divine manifestation, the avatar or incarnation of God is that concept. That although there is the human form, the awareness is divine. So, after telling this, now he says, look, that how my actions are. The Lord presents himself as a role model. The human form that is taken up is to demonstrate to us that how this form shows this nature of truth and how one can practice it in day-to-day life. So Lord gives his own example. As they say, one example is better than thousands of just words. So Lord says, look, how do I work? I work so much, but I am detached. I am not attached to anything. I work. Maximum work is done by Lord. Big, big works are all performed. But yet, Lord is unattached in all that. And what is the secret of being unattached? He says that it is not limited just to Lord. You can also do it if you understand the principle behind it, that name karma phale spriha, that I do not have the desire for the results of work, and thus they don't bind me. So, we understand the principle now. If Dona doesn't have the desire for the results, then Dona also will not be bound by the actions. That is the secret. It is limited not only to Lord, it is available to all of us. if we learn to work with this spirit, then that will be the case with all of us. So, therefore, Lord says that the one who knows me like this, and knows me means not only that Lord sitting somewhere there or right in front of Arjuna in the human form, but that Lord who is our true nature also, that also is to be seen as not attached to anything. And thus, when one knows that, one karma bhir nasa badhyate, that person is not bound by the actions done. Whenever you do it something for you, you get bound thereby. One of our teachers used to give this nice example. I have given that earlier also, but let's remember that again, that suppose a person is assigned the work. In many places there is that capital punishment. Many states have banned, many states still have it, many countries have it. So somebody is assigned to do that work, that say hanging up to unto death. So somebody has that job. If the judge gives the punishment, this person executes that. Now it is, the person is basically killing, but he doesn't, he is not charged with murder. In fact, he has punished a murder, that execution has been done by him. But he is not facing those consequences of murder or killing somebody, because he has nothing, no interest in that. He is not doing it for his some selfish interest. It is, he is just executing the order. He has not anything against that person who is being killed specifically. He is just executing the order. Now imagine the same action he does to somebody through enmity. Let me, and at his home, and suppose he strangulate a person like that. Now, action is same outwardly. The effect is completely different. Why? Because when he was just executing the order of the judge, this no selfish motive was involved in it. But when he is doing the same action at home, bringing somebody and murdering somebody through that strangulation, then that is a crime and he will be punished for that. He gets bound by his action because of this idea, I am the doer, and you desire something for you out of it. So, whenever that desire is there, I am doing this and I will get out this out of it, then that binds us. So who binds us? Who is the binder? Who creates bondage for us? We ourselves through our actions. Nobody else. That Swamiji's nice poem. No one but me to blame. I have been, that poem is very beautiful poem, that I have been hankering for results and thus I got bound, then I start blaming. My wife is like that, my this thing is like that, my neighbors are like that. It is all, then you keep on blaming others. But it was, I am my own embodied past wherein the plan was made, you see. That is how we get bound. So, remove this cause of bondage and thus you become free. It is in that sense we have to understand this teaching. And now he elaborates it further, that it is a very subtle knowledge. Not easily, it doesn't show itself. It is simple, but many, many simple things are not easily understood or easily perceived, because we are not habituated to see the truth, we always go by the crooked path. There was that nice detective story, I think, by Edgar Allan Poe, that somebody wanted some precious envelope, a precious letter was there, a document, and the thief tried all methods to get it. He searched the house, nook and corner of the house, everywhere, and couldn't get it. So when the purpose was after all done, there was some time before which it had to be found, he couldn't get it. So he asked him that, you see, I am such a perfect thief. I never failed. I searched every nook and corner of your house. I went into the attic. I also saw underneath your bed and everything. I searched every place. I looked into your files, all drawers I saw, and I couldn't find it. Where had you hidden it? Tell me, where did you hide it? And this man said, I know you are an intelligent thief. So even if I hide it any place, you are sure to find it. So what I did it was, I just kept it right in front on my desk. It was here, it is lying all the time, right in front of your eyes, because we miss the obvious. We miss the obvious. We know, if we just look a little carefully, that we are cause of our bondage. Our actions through desires, they become cause for our bondage. And if we see that, who wants bondage? Triveni, do you want bondage? No, nobody wants bondage. So when we do not want bondage, and we should not do what binds us. This very simple, straightforward thing. If we don't want bondage, just don't do what binds you. So, when we understand this relation, this connection, we will change the nature of our actions. So, Lord Krishna now describes that how subtle is this understanding. One has to penetrate a little deeper. We do not pay enough attention in conducting our activities. We conduct it kind of mechanically, born out of habits, and just whatever our desires prompt us, we just do, without waiting to see where it will lead me. You don't drive like that. When you drive, you know that this is where you need to go. You take proper directions and go accordingly and reach the destination. But when we are doing some actions, do we see that where the action is leading us? We don't pay attention to that. And thus, most of our actions inadvertently take us right into the ditch where we didn't want to go. They bind us. We didn't want to get bound, but we didn't pay enough attention as to where those are going to take us. And thus we get caught, we get bound. So Lord says, pay attention. This is these three verses are the from the point of view of philosophy and poetry, they are of great importance. A tremendous charm is there associated with these three verses. I remember how fascinating they proved to me when I first studied them. They discuss the nature of our activity and tell us how penetrative look we need to take about over them. The 16th verse in the 4th chapter, Kim karma kim karmeti कवयोप्यत्र मोहिता तत्ते कर्म प्रवक्ष्यामि यज्ञात्वा मोक्षसे शुभात्। Even devices are deluded as to what is action and what is inaction. I shall expound to you that action, knowing which you will be free from all ills. What a great promise. Lord is going to give us those actions. If we know which actions to be performed, then performing those or knowing that, we will become free. And he warns that it is not, this knowledge doesn't come very easily. So he says that even the wise are deluded about it. Wise in the sense, those who have lot of book learning and those who are intelligent and thus they have understanding of it or understanding of many, many things in the world. They are great mathematicians. They have discovered so many wonderful truths of science. But even they, in spite of their penetrative intelligence, very sharp intellect, they fail to understand this sublime truth. So, I should not be feeling depressed that I don't get it. Even they didn't get it, so if I don't know it is, I should not get depressed. This is a very important thing in our spiritual life. Never get depressed. Never feel sorry because you could not do something. Yes, you could not do something. This human tendency, human psyche is very funny. It behaves against us. In Keno Upanishad commentary, Shankara points it out that so that well, everybody knows what is good for you, is it not? And that Shankara in the commentary says, no, had we really known that something is not good for us, how would have gone to do it? And it is, if something is not good for us, we won't do it. It is many times or most of the times what is not right for us appears to be right and what is right for us appears to be wrong. So that is why our understanding is all clouded. So what happens if I do something wrong? When I am doing it, I don't get it. I feel that I am doing right. Afterwards, when the results come, then I know that I didn't do it correct. Like if I am eating the nice sweets, I see that very nice ones and I think that it is going to do me good. So I eat a lot of that. And then I realize that, well, that they didn't do any good to me. So it is that then when I make mistakes in lives, then I give myself another misleading signal. I am like that, you know. I always keep on making mistakes. And what is the effect of this kind of psychic? Then it, I have to keep on making mistakes just to prove that I am right, is it not? It is that because I said that I am like that, I keep on making mistakes all the time. So I have to prove myself right, whether others accept me as right or not. I must strive to prove myself right and thus I keep on making mistakes. So this should not be done. I made mistake once, but making mistake is to learn. It is like a small baby starts walking, say about a year old, and starts thinking of how to walk, takes a step cautiously, and even then falls from time to time, makes mistake, but through those mistakes the child learns, outgrows those mistakes. So thus, similarly, we should look upon our mistakes as the stepping stones to go beyond them. The mistakes are there, very good. But don't think that so you are like that and so you have to go on making mistakes all the time. No, that is not the case. Be self-confident. Never feel depressed. That depression saps all our energy, all our initiative to do something right in life. So, Lord Krishna says, don't be depressed. Even the learned people, very intelligent people, they also are not always, they don't always have the right understanding about what is action and what is inaction. What is action and what is inaction? It is not always clear to them. Kim karma, kim akarma. What is action and what is inaction is not clearly understood. So I will tell you now that what is the action by which you become free. And then he classifies it further. Here there is a difference in the interpretation by different commentators in the next verse. But the import is same. Although they have interpreted those words differently, yet the overall, the complete meaning of the verse has been given same by Shankara as well as by Ramanuja. But it is a very nice verse. Karmano yapi bodhavyam, bodhavyam cha vikarmanah, akarmanascha bodhavyam, gahana karmano gatihi. Here, another word is used, introduced. Earlier it was karma and akarma, action and inaction. Now, another variety is put into it, vikarma. That is, and the translation or the interpretation is slightly different by different commentators. There is something to know about prescribed action and action that is prohibited, as also about inaction. The way of action is mysterious. It is a great mystery, a very profound mystery, this action. We commit an action and we feel that it is finished there. No, it has a very profound implication for our life, which we do not see. It is very ghana karmano gati, very mysterious, very profound. The effects of that action will go on reverberating in our life for a long, long time to come. It is not that it just done and finished. So he says that one has to therefore clearly understand what is the right action. I will go by this interpretation. This is according to Shankara. And there is a little difference with Ramanuja's interpretation, but overall meaning is same. So for consistency, I will just follow this. That there are some actions which are prescribed and some actions which are prohibited. Some actions are prescribed actions. Some, that is, actions which you must undertake. Some actions are prohibited. You should not undertake. And there is the state where no action takes place. The three stages going. One is the right action, karma. What is the right action? Why is it called right action? Is you consciously taking it up, knowing its consequences. And thus, it is something that is right for you to do. So you know that you want to get there, and thus you are following the directions to get there. That is the right action. When you are not understanding it correctly, the directions are not understood correctly, then you are going in the wrong direction, going away from your goal. They are prohibited actions. If you do the prohibited actions, naturally you will go away from your goal. If you perform the prescribed actions, you will go towards your goal. Now this prescribed and prohibited is not exactly to the outer form of the action, but it is connected to the inner awareness about that work. Whether you are doing that work selfishly, motivated by desires, or whether you are doing it without desires for the results. When you do it like that, then it becomes an instrument of making you free. If you do it with desires, the same action will be binding you. So, the action in its outer form is neither good nor bad. But when you see the intent, inner intent of it, then its moral and spiritual value becomes apparent. Its moral and spiritual value doesn't depend on its outer form. So when it is said that actions are prescribed and prohibited, it is not about the outer form of the action. Somebody may say that whether killing, for example, is a good action or bad action, you cannot say. It is not easy to say. When you take an antibiotic, you are killing so many bacteria. Is it good or bad? Depends, you know, that well. It is, are you intent on killing the bacteria or bringing health to somebody? The intention decides it. And there may be some apparently very good action, feeding somebody, very good action. But it may be born out of enslaving that person through obligations. The motive might be that. One has to be therefore very careful in these things, that this happens a lot in international relationships, that one nation says that we will help you in this. The motive is not always very sanguine, you know. The idea is to get a foothold into that country and gradually make it as your base. So it is like that. We will help you out. It is not that always. It is not through the goodness of the heart. There are many times the hidden bad intentions there. So. Therefore, just by outer form of the action, you cannot judge whether that action is right or wrong, whether it is going to bind you or whether it is going to free you. So, it is, you cannot just say that this action is good, this action is not good. Swami Vivekananda has at many places, especially in Jnana Yoga, and given this beautiful analysis that how just the outer form of an action is incapable of bringing us the inner moral content of it. The inner moral content is not just this, seen by the outer form. The outer form may be not good, or from a superficial understanding it may be horrible. But if you go deeper into it, you see that it is good. And as in some cases you will find that the outer form is very nice, and yet the inner content was just so deceptive. So it is from that point of view, one has to dwell more deeper into seeing that what is the nature of the action. So three aspects are shown there. The action that is prescribed, the action that we should undertake. And then that action, if we do that, that will free us. And that will bring us to the state of peace that is in action. And then there is the action which is prohibited. Prohibited in the sense, if you do it, that will cause you more and more bondage. You will be bound more and more through that, and therefore that should not be undertaken by you. So in that sense it is prohibited. So one has to understand these actions penetratively. It is like doing meditation. One may say that is a very good action. What is the purpose of meditation? And that is also important, that somebody might be meditating, and one may think that it is such a good action, sitting and trying to do something good. But the motive behind it might be bad, that through this meditation I will get lot of power, and through that power then I will be the ruler in the universe, I will get all these powers that I don't have now, nor I don't have at the moment to enjoy the world. So through meditation I will get all those powers, and then it will be good for me. Somebody is having these, we have those ideas, and thus even the meditation gets used for many such non-spiritual things. But again, it is for somebody who has a lot of these desires, and thus motivating that person to divinize them becomes a good thing. It is a very subtle subject. One nice example I can give here in Ramayana. In that scripture, you see in the beginning, there is the story of how a dacoit, he was a robber, dacoit and killer. He used to rob highway on going people who were pilgrims, or they were on the journey. He was used to wait for them in the forest and then kill them. His name was Ratnakar. And how many people he had killed, so per person he used to kill, he used to put a small pebble in a big jar or a drum. So he had many drums filled with those pebbles. So many people he had killed. And once a sage Narada was walking there, and for him no sage, as this difference is not there to rob everyone. And he caught Narada and then decided that, let me take everything and then finish him off. But Narada, that sage, said, it is very good, but do you know how much sin you are accumulating, and who is going to share in your sin? And then the story goes, he said that my family members will also, for them, after all I earn all this money, they will be sharing it. He said, oh, go and ask them if they will be party to all your sin or not. And to his horror he found that while they were sharing that money that he used to rob, nobody was ready to take the share in the sin. His wife said, how do I know what you do to earn the money? After all, it's your duty to support the family. You should have done it anyway. I'm not concerned with that, you and your sin. And thus he was shocked when he heard the same thing from everyone. And then came that tremendous sense of repentance, and also the idea that what should I do now? Narada, that sage, assured him that, look, I will give you the name of Lord to repeat. But the name of the Lord is Rama. But he was habituated all the time to kill. So to utter that name, name of the Lord was impossible for him. So Narada, these great teachers are wonderful psychologists. So he told him to repeat the name Mara, which has the connotation associated with death. Because he was closely acquainted with death, killing people all the time. So Mara. So that was, he was associated with that. It was good for him. He could easily repeat that word. That mantra was okay for him. But Rama was too far away. So he started with Maram, Ram, 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 Ram. It became Ram, Ram. This is a very poetically presented truth, you know. That which we take up, we have to take up something, that action which is constitutionally suitable for us. We have to start from where we are, and then that gradually gets transformed. That leads us further and further towards our goal. So this is the secret. It is not the outer action, but the intent through which it is performed that transforms the life. So therefore this is told by Lord, that it is not so easy. You will ask me, just give me two lists, prescribed actions and non-prescribed actions. It is not that easy. Therefore he told in the beginning, even the learned, they get confused about it. You have to understand the principle through it, the principle hidden under the form of the action. And thus, that will tell you that what actions you should undertake and what actions you should avoid. We will get the detailed descriptions of that as we proceed in this study further. So, but he may, that is to be remembered, that this is a very profound science. The psychology is not so superficially understandable. It is very logical, but requires a little penetration. We have that penetration, but unfortunately, we do not use it for this purpose. We use it for trying to see what is there on Mars and what is there on Sun and all that. And what is there in our mind, we don't spend much energy on that. And go and find out what is there on the moon. Okay, it is shows that how much lunatics we are, you know, going to moon. So, it is, but Lord then in the next verse says the secret of it. Most important and very sublime verse, which puts the things in proper perspective. That it appears to be contradictory. Its nature, it seems that how is it possible? Karmani akarmaya pashet akarmani chakarmaya. Sabuddhiman manushyeshu sayuktah krishna karma krit. He who sees inaction and action in inaction is wise among men. He is poised and a performer of all actions. All words in this are very enigmatic. It is, you have to see action in inaction and inaction in action. So you are to see opposite, what is not there. Suppose somebody tells me, an in milli and milli in an. Foolish, you see, they will say, how is it? You should see the things as they are, see milli in milli and an in an. That is the right knowledge. If I see milli and then call her an, seeing an in her, that would be foolish, you see. That is not right knowledge, and Lord is seen to be telling something like that. In action, see in action. And in inaction, see action. Apparently, this statement seems to make no sense at all. And we have to see action in action, and inaction in inaction. We have to see the things as they are. Call spade a spade. Why you should call it hearts or something else? It is like that. You have to call that thing, see a thing as it is. Why should you see a thing as it is not? And then the result of this seeing is also told in a very funny way. This person, he says, how is this person? He is the wise amongst human beings. He is the wisest among human beings. How can you call that person a wise who doesn't see the things as they are, rather sees them in the opposite way? That person should not be called wise, but he is called wise. Not only that, he is called as the yuktaha, the yogi, who has practice the yoga to its culmination, is called yukta. Yukta means the one who has joined himself or herself to the truth. Yukta, that person who is now has now joined himself to the truth. And Krishna Karmakrit, he has done all actions. How has he done all actions? How a person can perform all actions? Certainly somebody might not have caught a whale. It is some very few people would be catching a whale. Not all people would be astronauts going to moon and something like that. How this person performs all actions? All these statements seem to be make no sense if we see them superficially. But there is a great wealth of meaning in this. That why you should see that action in inaction and inaction in action. There is always a confusion in our understanding about who is acting. Our understanding is muddled because we are habituated to mix up things. When the body is moving, we feel that the self is moving. Self is not moving. It is the body that is moving, and we mistakenly say, I am moving. Like I say, I am giving the discourse on Bhagavad Gita. Am I doing anything? The mind is producing some thoughts. They are getting converted into the words. And then that is coming out. And that is the action that is performed by the mind and the body. I am not doing anything at all. Am I doing anything? I am not doing anything whatever. It is, I am just still. You see on the screen lot of action going on in the movie. That fast cars are rushing, lot of warfare is going on, and then that all universe is shown on the, in the movie, like that what star something, Star War or what. So it is a big universe is being shown there on the small screen. The screen can be very small, you know. You can nowadays day you can see only on your phone also. All the movie can be seen on your iPod or phone, small thing. On that small screen you can see the whole universe there. Now so much action is taking place, the screen is not moving anywhere. No movement is there going on the screen. You see the cars moving at great speed. The screen just remains there. What is acting there now? Where the action is? The pictures are moving. The screen, the reality is not moving. Really, what is there? Even when you are seeing the car there moving, is the car there? If you say that, okay, let me go and sit in that car, you will only touch the screen. That is really there. So, the reality is not moving at all. The self is not moving at all. It is I was in a traffic jam. It happens to many people. You must have also experienced it. You can't live here in New England without experiencing traffic jams, you see. So, our car was just sitting, like once Vishwanath was driving, and I called from, they were somewhere in the middle between Connecticut and Providence. So I called, well, now who is driving? Are you driving or Anne is driving? He said, at the moment nobody is driving. The car is just sitting there. I am at the wheel, but nobody is driving. It is. So, now just see that it is in that state. Now what is moving there? At that time you get sometimes the delusion that you started moving when the cars in the lane next to you, they start moving. You are confused whether your car is moving or their cars are moving, those cars. It takes a little time because the movement is so imperceptible that you feel that, wow, come on, our car started. No, that the other that has started. It is on the rail track, it happens very often that you feel that your train has started, but no, it is some other train by your side that is moving, and that superimposition takes place. The movement there is superimposed on movement here, and vice versa. So, that is the we get confused so often in this, what is moving and what is not moving. So that is what is told here. Understand where the movement is taking place and where it is not. So in the apparent movement, you should see the non-movement of the self. And in the apparent non-movement, you should see that it is the appearance means movement. Whether it is right now seen by your faculty or not doesn't matter. That there is, as long as there is the ego, there is movement always. Even if you are sitting still, the ego is moving. Your mind is moving all through. So it is not really the stillness. It is apparently inaction, but really there is action going on. And in apparent action, the self is not acting at all. So this discrimination, we shall continue this discussion. This is a very important verse. So although we have discussed it a little bit today, in the next class we shall spend some more time on this, 18th verse, and try to understand it more. Any questions? You have a question, okay.
Just want to go with that the concept of the self, where action is around the self, but the self does not really move, is inaction.
Yeah.
Like a Purusha and Prakriti.
Yes, you are right there, that it is like that. But the discrimination is important there, that what is not acting, in confusion, action and inaction, they are mixed to such an extent that what is acting, we consider it as inacting, and what is inaction is considered to be acting. So therefore, a penetrative look has to be given. So you are right, Purusha and Prakriti, the Prakriti is alone acting, but that gets superimposed on Purusha, that is I feel I am acting, it is not right. So when this understanding is cleared, then one becomes free. That last line of this verse, which is again, as I said, very enigmatic, tells this truth. That in that sense, this person has done all the works. And no work is now needed. When you understand this, the life is fulfilled. So all the work which were necessary to be done have been done. We will come to that later. It is a really very interesting discussion. So we shall conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayih Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna